This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. I mention the following topics. You tell me what they all have in common. Ready? Here goes. Global warming, hydrofracking, renewable energy, protecting wildlife, eco-friendly transportation, exploring nature, clean air, clean water, conserving natural resources. Did you get it? Here's another hint. These are all issues hundreds of volunteers across the Commonwealth concern themselves with as part of their work in one particular group. That group? The Sierra Club. So how is it that a club named for a western mountain range is so active in the Old Dominion? For that answer and the chance to discuss your own top environmental concerns, please stay tuned through the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. The work of the Sierra Club in Virginia is our focus. And if you've got thoughts about it, we'd like to hear from you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Of course, this organization is involved in a wide variety of environmental issues, so if you've got a perspective you'd like to share about most any concern on the environment or question in that realm, you're welcome to join in, too. We're coming to you today from the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities in Charlottesville. Later in the hour, we expect to connect with some Sierra Club members active in the Shenandoah Valley, but we begin with the man who chairs the Piedmont group of the Sierra Club, John Cruikshank, and the woman who serves as statewide program manager for the Sierra Club of Virginia, Kate Adelson. Thank you both so very much for making time for us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Tom.
So let's go to you first, if I could, Kate. Basics. What is the Sierra Club? What are you and it trying to accomplish?
Sure. The Virginia chapter of the Sierra Club is just one state chapter of a national group, which is the oldest and largest grassroots environmental organization in the country. And we are very proud to have our roots going back all the way to 1892 with John Muir, who was a legendary conservationist. And many, I think, probably are familiar with him, having taken Teddy Roosevelt out into the wilderness and helped to create all of our first national parks, protecting the Yosemite Valley and beginning a conservation movement here in the United States, which, of course, has grown and gone through a variety of phases over the years, but has brought us here to Virginia. And the Virginia chapter dates back to about 30 years ago when it came about after having a number of regional chapters. And today we are very grateful to have over 10,000 members here in the state and many, many thousands of more participant activists in the work that we do to engage and educate people about environmental issues in our time and make sure that folks are staying connected with nature.
I think it's important to note that most of the people who are, you see, working with the Sierra Club are volunteers. And the Sierra Club is governed by volunteers. We have an executive committee on the state level, and we also have executive committees for each of the groups, and they make the decisions for the Sierra Club.
That's exactly right. One of the things I love most about the Sierra Club is that it's a very democratically run organization, and we look to our volunteer activists and leaders to help make decisions about what we should be prioritizing and ensuring that we're taking on the local as well as the statewide and national issues that people care about most.
The motto of the Sierra Club is to explore, enjoy, and protect the wild places of the earth. And I think that's important. So we have outings programs to get people out there, you know, exploring the wilderness areas and the national parks and state parks to enjoy it. And also through that, to have a real desire to protect those wild places. But we've also branched out into other areas such as climate change, which has been mentioned, and certainly sustainable living and community health. All of these are important issues for the Sierra Club.
John Cruikshank, you're an educator by trade. You spent many years as a public school teacher, an elementary school teacher, a social studies teacher, and for most of the end of your career before you retired, you were a school principal, elementary school principal in Albemarle County.
Right. Yeah, I'm still a reading tutor.
How did environmental issues and the Sierra Club become so important to you?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the concerns that I've had as a school teacher and a school principal is that I've seen that the rate of children who are having problems learning and are also having other health problems. So when you talk about learning disabilities, children who are suffering from autism or ADHD, I started teaching in 1972, and I still go into the schools as a volunteer now, and I've seen an incredible increase in the number of children who are having these types of difficulties. And I have come to believe that the increase is at least partially the result of environmental causes.
Pollution of some kind?
Pollution. And we have pollution in our food, in our water, in the air that the children breathe. There's just so much that they're exposed to now that I know I wasn't exposed to when I was a very young child, because so much of what's been going on in the United States in particular has been the increased use of man-made chemicals, and most of that has occurred since World War II.
John Cruickshank is a past statewide chair of the Virginia chapter of the Sierra Club. Kate Adelson is the group's statewide program manager. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. If you want to talk to our guests, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-967-2825. Or if it's easier to remember, the memory tool is 888-WMRA-TALK. John, do I understand correctly that the Sierra Club got started not only as a conservation organization, but as an organization that encouraged people to be out enjoying nature?
Oh, yes. In fact, that's how John Muir really got it started, was he was concerned about the Yosemite Valley. So he brought groups of people from San Francisco to go hiking in the Yosemite Valley. And as Kate mentioned, one of the most famous people he led on about a four-day trip was President Teddy Roosevelt. And by the way, there's a wonderful picture book in the library about that. It's called The Camping Trip That Changed America.
One of the reasons I asked is I'm curious if in the close to 40 years that you were teaching or running public schools, if you think that the change that you saw in the health of children in those schools was both what you perceive as increases in different kinds of pollutants that they're exposed to, as well as a decrease in the degree to which kids spend time outdoors.
That could be. And there's a wonderful book entitled The Last Child in the Woods, and it's written by Richard Louv. I hope I'm pronouncing his last name correctly. And one of the things that he talks about is how children, that the increase in the problems children are having, particularly with learning, is the fact that they are so exposed to video games and television, and they're spending so much time inside that they're becoming almost like hyperactive as a result of that. And what they really need is some time just to enjoy the outdoors, to be out there playing in the woods, exploring, turning over rocks, putting their feet in the streams. I mean, that is what really can help to make a person whole.
Mm-hmm. Kate Adelson, is there a story about how environmental activism came into your world?
Absolutely. In fact, it's a great segue into my personal story, which is I was very active with the Girl Scouts when I was younger, and I attribute much of my learning about how to be a good, you know, responsible citizen to those experiences. And at the time, I had no idea that that's what I was learning. You know, I was having fun with my friends, and I was exploring new things that I had not done before, hiking and canoeing and rock climbing and all kinds of activities that as a kid I found really exciting and different. And now, looking back on those experiences, I realized that I was also learning about how to be responsible for myself, how to take care of myself, and how to take care of others, and understanding that being caring actually extends to the environment. It extends to other species and animals and so forth in the world. It's really not just about being, you know, thoughtful about other people, but picking up after yourself, leaving a place cleaner than you found it. Those kinds of things are things that I have taken with me today. And I believe they're the kinds of things that really keep a person well grounded and help you to fully appreciate the things that are really important in life.
Yeah, I think you've brought out some really good points. And I think I was a Boy Scout also, and I still remember our camping trips, and it really did make a difference in my life. And I'd like to see more children out there in the wild places. And it doesn't mean you have to be out backpacking for weeks at a time. It could just be a hike to Ivy Creek Natural Area or to one of our state parks.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned that our phone number is fairly easy to remember as 888-WMRA-TALK, but it occurs to me that I forgot to mention that we also, in case you're a little shy and you don't want to get on the phone, would be perfectly happy to see a post from you on our Facebook page. And on Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. But apparently Joni already knew that because she posted here this question for the two of you, Kate Adelson and John Cruikshank. Joni asks, does the Sierra Club plan to sanction civil disobedience in D.C. this weekend at the rally? So she apparently knows about a rally that I didn't even know about.
That's true. There is a rally in Washington, D.C. about the Keystone Pipeline, and there will be many Sierra Club people there. About a year ago, they did sanction civil disobedience by the president. I think it was the president of the Sierra Club.
This is the nationwide organization.
Yes, Allison Chin and Michael Brune, who is the executive director. That was the first time that, to my knowledge, that had ever been done. And as far as we know, that there has been no sanctioning of civil disobedience at the upcoming rally.
That's right. My understanding is that was a one-time exception, and it's one of the things that makes Sierra Club a little bit different from some of the other environmental organizations. Obviously, there's a whole spectrum of groups that work on environmental issues, but something that causes the Sierra Club to stand apart is that we pursue only lawful means of engaging in the democratic process to, you know, make sure that we are protecting the environment. We do not do a lot of actions that people typically associate with groups like Greenpeace. Although some of our members may be engaged in those kinds of activities as well, the Sierra Club as an organization does not sanction that kind of activity.
Kate Adelson, you mentioned early on that one of the things that also separates this group from other environmental activism is that it is a grassroots organization. It's run by volunteers, and it mm-hmm. is a nationwide organization. There are statewide chapters throughout the country, and then there are local chapters like the one, the Piedmont group that John currently heads, and ones in the Shenandoah Valley, among others in Virginia, that we'll hear from a little bit later in the hour. One of the other things that separates you is that you are a politically active group. Many nonprofits stay out of politics. You don't hesitate.
That's right. We actually feel that being political is very important to our effectiveness. We endorse candidates who run for office and actually ask them to fill out questionnaires about their actions and potential actions on environmental issues that we're concerned about. We work on legislation at the state and federal level. We also, certainly are getting involved in local level decisions in our, city councils and county boards of supervisors. Engaging those local, state, and federal leaders to make sure that they're hearing from citizens. And I think what it really goes back to is the feeling that an active citizenry is going to contribute to making better quality decisions about the environment and, the things, the natural resources that we all rely on every day. And not only in terms of recreation, but also, of course, in terms of our agriculture and business and all of these other things that the natural world is really the foundation for in our lives.
Well, I certainly have plenty of questions for you about specific environmental issues, and I'm happy to ask those questions of you, but I also think there's a possibility that somebody listening has a favorite that they'd like to ask you about, and we'll be sure to make sure you have the phone number handy when we get back in a bit more than 1 minute. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham, still here in studio with me, program manager for the Virginia chapter of the Sierra Club, Kate Adelson,
plus the volunteer chair of the club's Piedmont group, John Cruikshank. And now also joining us by phone, a member of the Sierra Club's Shenandoah group, Alex Davenport. Mr. Davenport, thank you for making time for us.
Thank you for having me.
So what's your top environmental concern?
So for me, the top environmental concern is connecting for people the way that global climate change can be seen in a local community and how to take steps forward that act on not only a local level, but also that have global impact.
Alex, this is Kate. I'm so glad that you touched on that, and I couldn't agree more. That is certainly my top concern these days as well, and I think I can say the top concern of our entire organization. Climate change, we feel, is the single greatest issue confronting our societies today, and it's something that's connected so intricately with so many other things that we care about and issues in our local communities. And what we're trying to do as an organization here in Virginia is helping people to understand those connections, how they personally relate to climate change, and also, of course, understanding what they can do about it, hopefully so that we can all be working together in a unified way to address the primary sources of climate change pollution, which is carbon dioxide emissions coming from our transportation sector as well as our electric sector. Obviously, all of the vehicles and the electricity that we rely on every day, and ways that we can actually utilize tools that are already available to us right now to provide clean energy so that we can continue doing all the things we love.
Kate, how much do you gnash your teeth when you hear people who don't believe either that there is a global warming of any kind going on or that it is going on, at least in part, as a result of actions by human beings?
You know, it's not hard for me to understand why accepting that global climate change is a reality or that it's something that mankind is having such an impact on, because it is a global issue. And I think for all of us these days, looking around and appreciating the scale at which the human population has grown and the fact that we could potentially have such a drastic impact on the globe is hard to fathom for people, and myself included. So I can understand actually why people have a hard time with that. However, I think that the more that we learn, the more clear it is not only that climate change is in fact happening and that human beings are the primary cause for the unprecedented changes that we're seeing today, but also that there are things that we can do about it that are already available to us. And I am the positive sort of thinker that really feels like if we can start to accelerate the changes in our society that are needed to implement these kinds of clean energy solutions, that we can really turn things around. And actually, at the end of the day, we'll all be stronger communities and a stronger country for it.
Alex Davenport, I understand you're a graduate student at James Madison University these days. Do you ever run into anybody who you consider a climate change denier, or are you pretty much surrounded by people who see this issue the same way you do?
Well, you know, a lot of my friends obviously believe the same things I do about climate change. But I just feel whenever you're acting in any sort of a political environment, especially about the environmental issues, those are always beliefs that you run into. And for me, one of the biggest things that I have seen as a success in addressing those issues is bringing it back down to the local level, because, like Kate mentioned, it's so hard to conceptualize. When we talked about global climate change, what does that look like? But if you're able to bring it back down to the local level, and, you know, in some communities that looks like asthma rates increasing, in some communities that looks like cancer clusters, there are just these different issues impacting local communities that even if people want to write off climate change, you can talk about those issues that really hit home for them.
Alex Davenport, environmental activist and member of the Virginia Sierra Club's Shenandoah Group. Alex, thank you so very much for carving out a few minutes for us here on Virginia Insight today.
Thank you.
John Cruickshank, how often do you run into somebody who disagrees with your view on climate change?
I occasionally do, and there are people, and it's understandable because the seeds of doubt about climate change have been planted. And this is coming from the industries that are gaining huge profits from selling fossil fuels, either to fuel our cars, our airplanes, to generate our electricity. I mean, it's understandable that these companies want to stay in business. They want to remain profitable. So they are doing everything they can through the media, news networks. They are newspapers. They are trying to plant the seeds to make people question it. And people hear that over and over and over again.
So how do you respond when you're talking to somebody who sees this differently than you do?
Well, it's a lot of it is, you know, who are you going to believe? You know, are you going to believe James Hansen or are you going to believe Rush Limbaugh? Have I got that right? Obviously, I'm not a listener of his very often. But, you know, there are the experts. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, you know, has been studying this now for about 20 years, and they've come up with some pretty strong reports about this. And I think that the science is in, and I'm sorry, but if you really look at what the experts are saying, that more than 95% of the climate scientists around the world believe that there is climate change and that humans are at least partially to cause it. Causing it, then I think you've got to say, okay, this is real.
And in fact, despite the fact that there are so many moneyed interests behind the doubt of the reality of climate change, the majority of Virginians and the majority of Americans now agree. Many recent polls have shown that people actually agree and are seeing climate change in their own lives. And one of the concerning things about that is that climate change is actually happening at a faster rate than scientists had even predicted. So what we're seeing now is, a reaction from most people as they're watching small gradual changes in their lives that they can see attributed to changes in the environment around them that they've never seen before. And that's happening here in Virginia. It's happening along the coastlines where we've got recurrent flooding and sea level rise that is actually flooding people out of their neighborhoods. And as Alex alluded to, actually increasing asthma rates in some of our cities. The Richmond area is notoriously bad for air quality. And so many of our young people are suffering from asthma. And the more that we experience climate change in our area, we'll have hotter days more frequently that will, lead to more of those kinds of asthma attacks and affect a lot of people in a very personal way.
Well, if you listening want to share your perspective on any environmental issue, climate change or anything else, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. Or if you prefer to type instead of talk, you can reach us on the Virginia Insight Facebook page, where we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Kate Adelson serves as program manager of the Virginia chapter of the Sierra Club. John Cruickshank chairs the Sierra Club's Piedmont Group. And now joining us by phone is a professor of communication studies at James Madison University, who is also active with the Sierra Club's Shenandoah Group. Pete Busimek, welcome.
Thank you
for making time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So other than climate change, what environmental issue concerns you most, Dr. Busimek?
Well, other than climate change, I am very active in the Sierra Club's wildlands and wilderness campaigns. And I think protecting what's left of our natural heritage, of our wildlands, of our wilderness areas is very important. And so locally, that means the Shenandoah National Park, making sure that it's well taken care of, that the stewardship is appropriate. It means looking after the George Washington National Forest, participating in the planning process with the Forest Service, and trying to protect and manage that forest in the best possible way, making sure it's healthy and that it's there for future generations.
And I think it's important to note that 2014 is the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, which it was a wonderful law that was passed so many years ago and has done so much to increase the wild areas in the United States.
So what is it about wild areas that kind of gets your heart beating, and I'm guessing Kate's, as well as Pete's?
Well, when you get into a wild area and there are no roads and you're just hiking on a trail, it's a special feeling. You get to an area where all you can hear is nature, and you know that you're kind of on your own or with your group, and it's a special experience which I think everybody should have an opportunity to enjoy.
Dr. Busenek, we've only got you with us for a few more minutes, and we've got a Facebook question that just came in that might be just for you. So let me direct this one to you. It's from Mark, who asks, how can the Sierra Club encourage more young people, including children, to get outdoors and enjoy as well as protect wild places?
How can the Sierra Club? Well, we run lots of outings. So in the Shenandoah group, we have outings to get people out into wild areas to go hiking. We like to try to host programs, picnics, and so on. Kids can't often do a lot of hiking. You need to be more. I remember as a kid, I'd go hiking with my dad or fishing with my dad, and I wasn't quite big enough, and I'd always be the kid that fell in the stream and got wet and didn't really have that great of an experience sometimes. But, you know, those seeds, they're planted there. And so for younger kids, I think you take them out to picnic areas and camping areas where they don't have to go on a big hike or something to experience nature. It's all around there in the forest or the park. Also, with the big 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act coming up, there will be all kinds of activities, walks for wilderness, walks in wilderness, hiking in parks like the Ivy Creek that was mentioned earlier, state parks. There's an abundance of, and living here in the Shenandoah Valley, I grew up out in Utah, and, you know, if it wasn't for the mountains here, I'm not sure I would be very happy living in the East Coast or on the East Coast. So lots of opportunities here, especially in the Shenandoah Valley.
You know, some of the schools take their classes on field trips into natural areas. In fact, speaking of Ivy Creek, this is in Charlottesville, that organization has a schools program, and they have an educational coordinator. And schools bring sometimes their whole grade level, and there are guides who are there, and they take groups of 10 walking around this beautiful natural area here near the Ravana Reservoir. And the children really enjoy it, and we even hit on some of the SOLs that they're supposed to be learning at each grade level.
Wow. Pete Busenek is a member of the Executive Committee of the Sierra Club's Shenandoah Group. Dr. Busenek, thank you so much for carving out some time for us on Virginia Insight today.
Sure, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Still with us, Kate Adelson, the statewide program manager, and John Cruikshank. John, I look at your last name, and I'm afraid I'm going to mispronounce your last name, but every time I say your name, I mispronounce John. I'm not sure why that is. John Cruikshank is a former chair of the statewide organization, today serves as chair of the Sierra Club's Piedmont Group. Tell me about XL Pipeline. Is that an example of something that the Sierra Club's been really politically active about? Or does that not really concern Virginians that much, Kate?
You know, it certainly is, I think, a concern for all of us in the country because it's such a major national decision. But no, I think here in Virginia, we are trying to focus on some of the more localized issues, although we do have plenty of volunteers and member activists across the state who are getting involved in those issues independently. And we certainly support those efforts. I think one of the things about the Sierra Club that folks should know is that we try to make sure that we're being a resource and supporting local activists in any way that they would like to be involved to protect the environment. So there are many groups that are active on the Keystone XL pipeline. Of course, I think 350.org is probably one of the most well-known among them and many, many others. And
so
we
in Virginia, for many years, you were working on things related to coal? And that is, you see, a concern for Virginians.
Yeah, to me, that's a little bit more of a direct concern because, of course, we don't have tar sands here in Virginia, and we do have coal. And coal is a huge part of Virginia's history, and coal has obviously, for many, many years, hundreds of years, provided an important fuel source for us, as it still does today. But what we've learned about coal over the years is that, unfortunately, it has many, many negative impacts and is an extremely dirty fuel source when it comes to the pollution that results from burning coal for our electricity, as well as all of the other stages of the life cycle of coal that many folks are not as aware of, although these issues do tend to come into our lives in dramatic and painful ways, like we have recently seen with the coal ash spill in the Dan River. And even though that was just over the border in North Carolina, that is directly impacting the lives of many Virginians. It is contaminating waterways that people typically would be getting geared up to enjoy here in the springtime and in the coming summer months. And there are advisories now that you should not be active in those waters. I participated in public hearings and meetings where young people down in those areas, Danville and South Boston and so forth, are really concerned because their regular activities, swimming and boating and fishing in those areas, all the way out to the Kerr Reservoir, are now not accessible to them and are threats to the area. There is a threat of increased risk of cancer in those areas for many folks because of the really aggressive neurotoxins and other toxic materials that are found in coal ash and are now in our river.
The work of the Sierra Club in Virginia is our focus this hour, but as you've heard, pretty much any environmental issue, whether it's specific to Virginia or not, we're happy to discuss. We've got phone lines open at 888-WMRA-TALK. We have to pause for a brief break, and Kathy in Harrisonburg, you'll be our next call when we get back. John Cruikshank, past statewide chair of the Virginia chapter of the Sierra Club, is one of our guests. Sitting next to him, Kate Adelson, the group's statewide program manager. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We're going next to Harrisonburg. Kathy, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment for our guests, please.
Yes, I've been really listening with a lot of interest, and especially to the emphasis on climate change and how we need to change our energy sources and from the traditional coal and all its problems to clean energy. And I know that solar energy has got huge potential to help us get to where we need to go. And I also am aware that the states around Virginia all have a whole lot more rooftop solar panels on their homes than Virginia does. And I was wondering if the panelists could talk a little bit about why Virginia is different than the other states and what we can do as citizens to change this so we can not be behind but instead be a leader.
Thank you so much for your question, Kathy. This is Kate, and I really appreciate that. It is unfortunate that Virginia is behind. We would like to think of ourselves as leaders on all of the, you know, important issues that we as Virginians care about. And unfortunately, right now, when it comes to clean energy, we are lagging behind. The areas of clean energy that we have the most potential for in Virginia are solar, wind, both land-based and particularly offshore wind off our coasts, as well as energy efficiency, which was mentioned earlier, and geothermal and other clean energy technologies. And I believe that the main reason that we have not seen more progress in Virginia is because we are lacking a mandatory state standard for renewable energy, as well as energy efficiency, which many other states have, and other kinds of incentives that can make those clean energy technologies more available to citizens and businesses throughout the state. Our largest utility company here in the state of Virginia is Dominion Virginia Power. And while they do a great job supplying power to us with some of the traditional fuel sources that they have worked with in the past, coal, natural gas, nuclear, and others, they really are not moving forward as quickly as we would like them to towards clean energy resources. And of course, it takes state laws to inspire and encourage them to make those kinds of changes. And so I would encourage anybody who's interested in these issues, concerned about climate change, and just concerned about the pollution in our communities to get in touch with your local elected officials, also your state delegates and senators, and even the governor, to let them know that these are issues that really are important to you, that you want to see Virginia moving forward faster on clean energy. And there are so many benefits to us doing that. It really is a great economic opportunity for our state. There are tens of thousands of jobs that are available if we were to start expanding our solar energy industries, expanding our energy efficiency programs. And there are many, many ways that citizen activists can get involved in the state general assembly, as well as in their local, municipal governments, to make sure that your local elected officials and leaders in your community know that this should be a priority.
Kathy, thank you so much for your call. John, we're going to run short on time soon, and I want to be sure to give you a chance to talk about that, because this next item, transportation, is something that's going to surprise some people, is an important area of, can I say, environmental concern for the Sierra Club?
Absolutely. It is, because a lot of the greenhouse gases are produced through the transportation system. And the Virginia Department of Transportation is drafting their six-year plan, and they're asking for input on it. Well, in their draft plan, they have $9.9 billion set aside for new highway construction. They have $3.26 billion set aside for transit, and they have $12.2 billion set aside for the maintenance and operations of their roads. Now, this has been true historically, that they put most of their money into roads and very little into public transit. And really, if we want to cut down on our greenhouse gases and clean up the air we breathe and the water we drink, we should stop relying so much on the automobile, and we need to use public transit more. We need to use our railroad systems more, and we need to give people an opportunity to walk and to bicycle more. And you know, in many places where they live, Virginians are not able to even walk safely across the street. You know, they can't go shopping from one store to another without getting into their car. And that's something that I think we really need to fix here in Virginia.
John Cruikshank, this question that just came up on our Facebook page from Tara may be for you, since you're the former public school teacher. But Kate, I'm sure that Tara would be happy to hear your perspective as well. Here she says, it would be great if we could get our friends at the Sierra Club to really push from the political end to get states to integrate more of an environmental science class that our ninth graders will take, as opposed to just the regular earth science class. As a teacher, I taught AP Environmental Science for the first time last year, and at a school with an enrollment of over 800, there were only 16 kids enrolled in the class.
Wow. I'm sorry to hear that. I know that at our local high school in Charlottesville, that in the environmental science class is one of the most popular, and those students are strongly encouraged, maybe required, to attend some Sierra Club meetings. So we frequently have 10 of those students coming to some of our programs, and I agree with you. I think that in the environmental science classes, it should be required. I think that it should be part of the SOLs. It should be an important part of the SOLs. I know it is in the SOLs now, but it's not stressed as much as it should be, because this is really a critical issue that the future of our children is at stake. I mean, we have got to clean up this environment, or who knows what it will be like in 50 years.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. And I'd just like to say that there are a lot of creative measures that schools and teachers are taking throughout the Commonwealth that are helping to alleviate that gap in learning. I know just yesterday, actually, there was a class of middle schoolers from the Sutherland Middle School here in the Charlottesville area that came to participate in a State Corporation Commission hearing on Dominion Virginia Power's long-term energy plan. And this is the plan that decides what kinds of energy sources our utility company is going to use to provide our electricity. And those of us who attended the hearing were incredibly impressed at the intelligence and thoughtfulness of these students who came and testified for the first time before the Public Service Commission, or State Corporation Commission, rather, here in Virginia, and did an outstanding job. And kudos to the teachers who have made that interdisciplinary program possible, and hope that more of that is going on throughout the state.
Thank you for that perspective, Tara. We're going back to Harrisonburg. Next call coming in from Dorn. Dorn, you're on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please, for the Sierra Club's Kate Adelson and or John Cruikshank.
I think this is for Kate. I'm a retired physics professor from JMU, and during my career I did a lot of modeling and things, and in fact I developed one computer model for the atmosphere of Mars, though I don't know anything about the Earth's atmosphere. Mars is a lot easier because you don't have anybody yelling at you if it rains on your picnic. Earlier on in the program, Kate said that climate change was happening more rapidly than the models had shown. And as far as I'm aware, at least the temperature increase in the last dozen years or so has been much slower than the models that were projecting in the early 2000s. And I was wondering what she was referring to when she was referring to the fact that climate change was happening faster than the models had shown.
Sure. So I also am not a scientist, but what I do in my job is helping to look at the resources that are available from scientists around the world and making those resources understandable and accessible to the average citizen. And what I've been reading is that there are, obviously many, many different areas in climate science that are being studied, and the changes that are being observed both in the melting of ice sheets and glaciers around the world, in the shifts that we're seeing that are causing more rapid and larger scale wildfires, both in the U.S. and in many other countries. Many of the different specific types of changes that are being studied in the environment globally are all increasing at a faster rate than was expected. And my understanding, again, just at the most basic level, is that there are a variety of factors that scientists could not have foreseen that are starting to play into the complex processes that are contributing to climate change. And so, for example, out in the West, we've got the pine beetle, which is devastating pine forests throughout the West. And as those forests become dead and decaying, they are more susceptible to wildfires. And we're seeing the intensity and the heat and the dryness of the West increasing. And then these additional factors playing in also. So it's contributing to even more large scale and devastating wildfires than we have ever seen seen in the history of our country.
Doran, thank you so much for your call. I think we've got time for just one more. And for that, looks like we're going to Steele's Tavern. Jay, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
I wanted to mention a real powerful, positive way that interested citizens can get involved with natural resource protection, and that is volunteer water quality monitoring. Virginia has more than 50,000 miles of perennial streams, and there's only a couple of dozen people who work for the state whose job it is to determine the baseline information about how clean those streams are. And there's a program called the Virginia Save Our Streams program that teaches interested citizens from high school to retired age to go into the streams and collect incredibly valuable data on how clean the streams are. And the State Department of Environmental Quality respects that data and uses it, and it's a great way for people to be involved in a very meaningful way. And there's the Virginia Save Our Streams program has a website, which is vasos.org, and you can find out all about it there.
Thank you so much. That is such an important thing to mention, and I'm glad that you called in to contribute that today. There really are so many ways that people can get involved, and I think a lot of folks don't realize how many different ways they can be active in terms of supporting and protecting the environment around them. I know that there are local groups with the Sierra Club who have been involved in local water monitoring efforts, either because of a local pollution issue or just in terms of the general tracking of the quality of the water because of concerns about a variety of different chemicals that exist in our waterways these days. And I'd also just like to mention that I think it's really important for folks to keep in mind that these days, environmentalism has been very politicized and often in a negative way. And, here in Virginia, most of us are concerned about protecting the quality of our communities in many ways. And being environmentalist doesn't mean that you have to be liberal. It doesn't mean that you have to vote for a particular party or anything like that. It really comes down to believing that the environment is something that we all have a shared responsibility to protect. And I hope that folks, listening to this program realize that there is a place within the Sierra Club and in other environmental groups throughout the state, as there are many, to be involved and make sure that you're being active in supporting the local environment, regardless of your values or your political affiliation.
I'd also like to thank Jay for that comment, because I know that in our local area here in Charlottesville, there's a group called Stream Watch, which comes out with a report almost every year. And that information about the quality of our streams is actually used by the local decision makers, our elected officials. So that type of work is extremely valuable.
Jay, thanks so much for your call. John Cruikshank, we've got about 30 seconds left for you to give us your best pitch on why somebody who isn't already involved with the Sierra Club should get involved with it.
Well, it'll make you feel good because you'll be investing your time in the future of your community and the planet. You'll make a lot of good friends, and you will learn a tremendous amount.
This is some of the most fulfilling work that I have ever been involved in. And so I'll just echo what John says. We have such a great time together. We have a great deal of fun. And it's just very fulfilling work because you get to work with fabulous people and know that you're making a difference in your community for everybody to enjoy.
Our guests have been statewide program manager for the Virginia chapter of the Sierra Club, Kate Adelson, as well as volunteer chair of the Sierra Club's Piedmont group, John Cruikshank. Thank you both for making time for us.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you.
Virginia Insight's executive producer, Matt Bingay. Our associate producers, Bob Levicky and Terry Ward. We had extra help today from Sarah McConnell, Andrew Windham, and Elliot Majerzik at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Some of our break music is supplied by Robert Jospe and Inner Rhythm.
You can find postings of Virginia Insight on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. And when you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will find links to more information about our guests and the work they are doing. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.